Hi everyone, this is Laura from the Geek Chic Elite. We are doing something special today and we're talking Avengers Infinity War spoilers. Actually more than spoilers, everything about the movie. And I have Gary online with me. He is a contributor to the website. And Gary, if you want to introduce yourself also.
Hi everybody, I'm Gary. I'm really looking forward to chatting about Infinity War today.
Awesome. So we both saw it on opening night, Thursday night, right?
Yeah, I was one of the first people in line. I was not willing to risk even one single spoiler.
Wow.
So I had to get into the first show.
Yeah, I only watched one of the trailers. And I watched it maybe a couple times and then I stopped. I was like, you know what? I want to go into this, like, knowing as little as possible. Which is hard to do when you work and write in the field, because it's like a minefield trying to avoid everything.
Somebody told me that they hadn't seen any media for this film.
Wow.
And I said, how is that even possible? It's on every bus shelter. It's before every movie. They spent like $1 billion advertising this movie. It blew my mind.
That's intense. And you think also with like logging on to Instagram or Facebook, if your interests are set to things like comic books and entertainment industry, those things are going to pop right up on top. So the fact that they danced around that is incredible, because I could not.
Yeah, Twitter is hell for spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those things where no matter what you do, you can't avoid them. So I stay off Twitter leading up to these big tentpole types of events, just to stay safe.
Oh yeah, and Tumblr too. Tumblr is like, you'll get a visual spoiler in 2 seconds, which I think is like intense. With Twitter, it's usually written, like you could have it set so your pictures don't pop up right away, but it's also like you're playing with fire, like it's the internet, you can't really avoid too much.
Yeah, when Game of Thrones is on, it's the same thing. You can't dodge it. So you just basically have to avoid anyone and everyone, even close to the internet.
Yeah, it's true. So let's go over to what our initial reactions were about the film. So when the ending happened, not the post credit scene, but when the ending happened and you're sitting there, what was going through your head?
One, I thought it was a monumental event in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I can't believe that after 10 years of waiting, this is the culmination of everything we've been watching for all of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't quite as shocked as others. Mm. I know I viewed the film with a bunch of people who were not quite up on the comic book lore and the universe as I was and some of my friends. So they were a bit more shocked than I was. But I think they did a really good job of introducing tension into the Marvel Universe where there hasn't been tension before.
Mm-hmm.
So I never, even in the first Avengers or Age of Ultron, I never really felt like the Avengers had a chance to be defeated. That there was a realistic shot. Yes, ultimately we know the heroes are always going to win, but other than Loki, I don't think that they've really been able to develop compelling villains until Infinity War. Mm. And they've run into the heroes run into Thanos, and all of a sudden it's a brick wall, and we realize right from the very beginning of the movie he can win. So at the end, when he's sitting there surveying all that he has built, I really enjoyed that, because I think that this film brought that tension, which the other films didn't. What did you think?
I thought pretty much the same. I thought very similar. I had taken my sister to see the movie, and she hadn't watched like a couple of the films. So she had been asking questions throughout. So I actually missed some of the lines because she would lean over to me to ask a question. But I remember when the screen cut to black, you know, there wasn't like an initial thought in my head. I was like, holy shit. Like, I'm still honestly processing the movie, and going into work on Monday after a couple of my coworkers had seen the movie, because I had seen it before everyone in my office. So when I got in on Monday morning, we just had like these knowing looks, and I was like, you asked me to try and sum up what I felt about the movie, and I was like, I couldn't. I was like, it's impossible for it to be one thing because it was so many. And I was shocked that not necessarily the outcome of like everyone kind of quote unquote dying, but more so who it was that died, because it's like the original Avengers are pretty much all still intact, which I thought was very interesting. And it definitely oh, my cat is making noise. Hi, Joe. And so it just completely floored me that they would do that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that they chose the characters to disappear that they did, because it's ultimately those characters who are left, mm-hmm. are the past of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And a lot of the characters who disappeared are the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I wonder if there's some cinematic relevance to that. Is the beginning of the next Avengers film going to be that Avengers last ride, where we have the opportunity to say goodbye to these characters who we've grown up with for the past, and the characters who disappeared before they return, obviously, are going to then somehow come in and take over the mantle of the Avengers that are going to disappear themselves, the original Avengers, the original team.
Yeah, and I think even with the post-credits scene where you have, you know, Fury calling, you know, Carol Danvers, that also, the person behind me, they're like, what is that? And, like, whoever they're with, they answered. They're like, oh, it's, you know, Carol Danvers, the Carol Corps. And that's something that hasn't really been addressed in the limelight of Marvel. Like, you know, people who read comics will automatically know what that is, but there's so many new properties that are being introduced, not only to the movies, but also the TV shows for Marvel. And I think it's really interesting for them to kind of bring about all this into the mix. You have also things like, you know, The Runaways now on Hulu for Marvel, and that's targeted to teenagers. Same with Cloak and Dagger will be premiering next month. So it's interesting that not only are they positioning themselves to keep their business afloat for a very, very long time, but that they're able to kind of generate excitement through their big marquee kind of properties. You still there?
Did I accidentally mute myself?
I think you did.
I have a mute button on my microphone and I have a mute button on my headset. Apparently the headset works on the microphone as well. The thing that I think they're really good at is generating interest, but not only amongst their core demographic. Mm-hmm. They've been very successful at drawing fresh blood into their universe. Mm-hmm. So as I said, I went with a number of people who were not necessarily big Marvel fans. And one of them actually said, well, I guess I've got 18 movies to watch now, because he'd never seen any of the previous movies. He was one of my work colleagues, and he said that now I have 18 movies to watch because he was interested in catching up on seeing what came before.
Now,
so
continue.
Oh, I was just going to say, they've done a really good job about making the films accessible, particularly this one. Mm-hmm. It's a story that rewards fans who've been with the series from the beginning, mm-hmm. rewards fans who are familiar with the backstory of the comics, but doesn't preclude people who aren't either of those things from enjoying the movie. And I honestly think that that's probably the biggest positive of this movie, mm-hmm. is that it doesn't exclude anyone.
Yeah, it's a winning it's a winning formula. The Russos, I mean, they showed what they could do with Winter Soldier, which is still my favorite Marvel movie. and they've just continued because they're able to, you know, combine their love of the comics, knowing that there has to be changes in the movie medium. So with your coworker that had never seen any Marvel movie, I'm guessing they enjoyed it that much where they're like, oh, I have to watch everything else, which is interesting because not all of the characters had, you know, a big development. Like, I think I felt that Captain America, like, he kind of didn't do that much in the movie. Yeah, he fought and stuff, but there was no, you know, big development for him. It was more like Tony had a bigger development. But did your coworker like it? And did you also like the film?
So, yes to both. Yes to both. And I think the thing that I liked about Captain America's arc that you bring it up is that, yes, he didn't really do as much as some of the other characters, but I think what's worth noting is that he stayed true to his character. Mm-hmm. So, yes, he wasn't wearing the mantle of Captain America, but loyalty, trust, friendship, mm-hmm. protecting what's important, though protecting the downtrodden, those hallmarks of his character shone through. Mm-hmm. And I think that in that, we really got a sense of who Steve Rogers is. Mm-hmm. And it's not a shield. It's not a Star-Spangled Banner. It's that core element of protecting the people who need to be protected regardless of where they are.
Yeah, it was very like First Avenger, where he's just kind of, he was a lot darker in this movie, but he still has that like kind of golden, you know, very true to self vibe about him.
Absolutely. He's his portrayal is still my favorite, and I think Captain America First Avenger is not one of the most popular films mm-hmm. in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it's absolutely one of my favorites. I think that Chris Evans did such a fantastic job about building that character. Mm-hmm. And as origin films go, it's still one of my favorites.
Yeah, I think that film aged very well.
Yeah, it really did. I agree with you completely. And the supporting cast, the Howling Commandos also mm-hmm. did very well in small roles. And of mm-hmm. course, Hugo was chewing some serious scenery as the Red Skull.
And my dear Peggy.
yes. Peggy is still my favorite. I'm disappointed that they canceled her show. One day, perhaps, we'll see it on Netflix or Hulu. But for now, we need to take solace in the first Avenger and the two seasons we did get. So.
Yes, very true. Now, what else did you like about the movie and what didn't you like?
So, I have a few dislikes. Mm-hmm. I have much more likes. I really liked the Thor storyline. I thought that Chris Hemsworth lent some serious credibility to the spacefaring epic. Mm-hmm. Watching Loki die was a pretty intense scene. Because I think that in that moment, Thor has such mixed emotions with this character who continually betrays him. Mm-hmm. And yet he keeps hoping that at some point he is going to be redeemed. Yeah. And it looked like that Loki was going to betray him again, but he spoke instead to his better angels. And he tried to save the day, obviously couldn't match Thanos, but that was a very difficult scene for Chris Hemsworth to play, to see that range of emotions, I think. What were some of your favorite moments?
Definitely Thor's arc. He definitely went through like the you know, it was a pretty typical hero's journey, but I think it's really what we needed to see from him. And it was amazing because he was still able to bring in the humor that Ragnarok had displayed for him, which is great. And then he also, you know, got to be very human in an aspect. He was very raw with his emotions, and you know, he went on this crazy journey, and when he came back to Earth with the axe, the Stormbreaker, that was freaking amazing. And I think everyone in the theater was just like, I think I have no favorite Avenger. So that was definitely one of my highlights too for the film, was definitely what Thor accomplished. And I remember even when Thor struck Thanos, and Thanos, like, you should have aimed for the head, like, there were people in the audience going, oh, shit. You could audibly hear, like, holy crap. There was a split chance that people thought, hey, they got this. And it was just completely spun on its head.
Yeah, relative to that, I thought it was really great that Groot sacrificed his arm to put that together. Such a great little moment. That was one of the things that the Russos did well, is those clever little moments that really made you feel that the universe was connected. And it was the small moments like that that I really appreciated.
Oh yeah, there's such like tiny nuances in the script. You have Thor introducing Groot as his tree, and then Steve Rogers, like, bless his heart, he's like, I'm Steve Rogers. And then you also have like Bucky picking up a Rocket and spinning him around, and, you know, discussion about sealing his arm, and like all these little tiny moments that just, they add like a levity to such a heavy material. And this was definitely one of the darker places that the MCU went. Mm-hmm. So
they did a good job of, this was actually, in my view, mm-hmm. one of the movies that had the most amount of humor in it, but it never felt out of place because it was contrasting those darker moments. Mm-hmm. And I think you needed to break that tension with the humor. I feel as though The Last Jedi, to get too off topic, but The Last Jedi tried to do that a little bit, but the humor felt out of place in some cases. Mm-hmm. It was a bit too much, but in the Avengers Infinity War, it wasn't that way at all. It felt appropriate, I think, because we've seen the development of these characters. Mm-hmm. So in the context of the film and into context of the characters, we never felt that it was out of place because it was very much in character for the characters to be doing it.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of these characters have, you know, they've had their little quips and their own styles of humor. And you also have the fact that they're all going through these, like, traumatic experiences. And when people are put together in those moments, you bond. And sometimes the best way to cope is to crack a joke or, you know, lighten the moment, because they know what they're up against could potentially mean death. And I think that's also very real, because I could tell you a year and a half ago, I was on a train that derailed, and it was a very scary moment because, you know, there were people on the train screaming and we thought it was on fire, like very chaotic. And once things started to quiet down, we started to crack jokes because we had all this adrenaline, like, okay, what do we got to do? So for me, like, the fact that they're able to bring in that humor during dark moments and it just blends so perfectly is, like, it makes sense. You know, you always have to, like, laugh through the process. And that's honestly one of my favorite things about the entire Marvel, you know, repertoire of movies and TV, is just there's always that little touch of light that kind of refines it.
Absolutely. They've done a great job. So speaking of light, mm-hmm. let's talk about some of the theories that we think about the movie.
Oh my God.
I'd like to get your take on who you think is dead and who you think is coming back.
Ooh. Oh my God. Who I think is dead. That's really hard to say. I don't think, I want to say Loki is dead, but I want to say that he also set himself up prior to actually dying to have a lasting impact. So I think he, like, maybe influenced Thanos in a way that has yet to be fully realized. I thought Thanos was, like, I don't know Thanos too well on the comic perspective, but it didn't seem like he would be the one to play jokes, and the fact that he was, like, turning weapons into bubbles and butterflies, I was like, that's more of Loki. Like, Loki would do something like that. So I think Loki's maybe dead, but I don't think we've seen the last of him. I also don't think Gamora is dead. I think she's actually going to take, the Soul Stone is very different. So I think it's kind of going to replace her somewhere else in the universe maybe she's going to have to be a guardian like the Red Skull turned out to be. I also want to say everyone that disintegrated isn't dead, especially those who have confirmed sequels. So I think their deaths aren't, I mean, I want to say they're dead, but there's other ways for them to be living or to become alive again. And the Russos did say the deaths are permanent, or Kevin Feige did, but, I don't know. There's ways to overcome death in the universe.
Yeah, I think that I'm not sure about Loki. I think Loki might have seen his last sunset in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, actually. Mm-hmm. Because if you really think about it from a narrative perspective, Loki very much dominated the first few phases of the Marvel movies.
That's
he was
true.
In Thor, he was the antagonist in
Avengers.
Yeah. And he popped up throughout other movies. So mm-hmm. in some ways, it's very fitting for Thanos to crush the life out of Loki when he's the future of the villains in the Avengers. Mm-hmm. I think I agree with you that I don't think Gamora's dead. It depends on how they're going to play it, but in theory, if her soul is what's powering the Soul Stone, if you mm-hmm. figure out a way to break the Soul Stone, her soul is released. And they did make a point of showing that her body was at the bottom of that pit.
Yeah.
It didn't disintegrate. It was still there. So in theory, if her soul is powering that stone, you break it, her soul could return to her body and mm-hmm. she's good to go. I think the Vision is dead.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
think there's going to be coming back from... I don't think there's going to be coming back from a fist through the brain pan like that. And I think the people who disintegrated, they're not dead. They're all coming back somehow, mm-hmm. whether it's going to a different Earth and bringing them back, or however they decide to do it. I think that they're all coming back some one way or the other. Black Panther's movie made $1.5 billion. let's be honest, Marvel doesn't technically own the movie rights to Spider-Man, so he's not going to die. Mm-hmm. And Guardians of the Galaxy 3 has also been confirmed, so considering only Rocket is left from that team, I feel as though they're going to be coming back as well.
It's just going to be about Rocket, though.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So I heard another interesting theory in the evening, actually, about mm-hmm. the reason why Doctor Strange gave the Time Stone to begin with is that in the one future that he saw where the Avengers win, somehow Tony is integral to the success of this plan. I don't know what context is, whether he needs to sacrifice his life or whether he needs to come up with some sort of invention. I suspect he'll sacrifice himself as a final cost to defeat Thanos. But if you look at what Doctor Strange said, he absolutely decided that he would not give up the Time Stone to save either Tony or Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, even at Tony's surprise, he offers the Time Stone to Thanos.
Yeah.
It just seems that Tony needs to be alive in Avengers 4 for a reason, and Doctor Strange has seen why.
Yeah, I think Doctor Strange definitely knows more about what needs to happen. And, you know, he said, as you mentioned, he said it in his line, he's like, this is the only way. And then it kind of was echoed again in what Thanos said to Tony at the end, which was, I hope they remember you, or I hope that they will remember you, or something like that. Which also tells me that the people that disintegrated, you know, half the universe, you know, if half the universe is gone, what is there to be remembered, kind of thing? So I think, you know, they're going to come back in some way. It's probably not going to be like a parallel universe or whichever, but Doctor Strange definitely knew what he was doing in some respect. And it still doesn't cut the fact that, like, so many of the deaths were so painful. Like, you know, when Bucky was the first to go, right? And he said Steve, and that was... And he said it in the way that was said in the first Captain America movie. So it was just, like, that mirror. And then you have, like, Peter Parker, who, you know, super emotional. He's like, I don't feel good or whatever, because he sensed it. And no one else really realized that they were dying or disintegrating in a sense until it was actually happening. But he knew beforehand. And that was just like, rip my soul out.
And watching Black Panther disintegrate in front of his Dora Milaje companion was heart-wrenching, because her whole role, her whole reason for being is making sure that nothing bad happens to him. And she was completely helpless as he disintegrated right in front of her eyes.
Yeah.
Danai Gurira played that unbelievably.
Oh, she's amazing. I thought
she did a fantastic job in that role.
Yeah. I also think him saying this is no place to die was just also really sad, because he's dying, you know, in his native land on the battlefield, but they're not actively in a fight. You know, they were kind of, they thought this was after the fight, you know? So that was just, but it could mean if Shuri survived, that she's the new queen of Wakanda right now.
And that's very true.
It takes you a moment to kind of get over those things and just like think about what it really means. You know what's funny that I thought? I remember with the post credits scene, this just came back to me, but when you see Fury typing on the beeper, I guess, and you see the call waiting to go through, I turn to my sister and I'm like, it's gonna be Coulson. So I'm kind of upset that didn't happen, but
I keep waiting for him to show back up in the movies, but it seems they've pretty well relegated him to television, which is unfortunate, because he was the glue that held those first few movies together. It was one thing that I really enjoy about television shows, and it's part of the reason why I'm in the minority that Deep Space Nine was my favorite Star Trek show, is that it does, when those small characters are there and they feel like really fully fleshed out characters, real people, they enhance the world so you can see, okay, well, that's a real person and that's a real person. So they serve as the backdrop to what is ostensibly a real world. And that's one thing that Coulson did in those first few films, is that he provided that backdrop to make it seem as though, hey, this is just a regular guy, a real person watching these amazing things.
Yeah. It's also, I also wonder how, I don't know if you watched the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, but this is a spoiler for the episode that just premiered right after the movie. In the episode, they asked Daisy, Daisy Johnson, they're like, oh, did you see what's happening in New York? So I don't know if the show is actually going to be connecting with the movie, but what do you think are going to happen to the shows that are connected to the MCU proper? So that's like the Defenders, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm not going to mention any others, because the Inhumans is probably canceled at this point.
I don't think the Inhumans is coming back.
No.
I think that they will reference the events much in the way that they did the previous shows, much like Daredevil did, referencing the Avengers. But I think they're going to try and keep it away from their storylines. Because for the most part, with the exception of The Punisher, Luke Cage and Iron Fist, the street-level shows are more grounded in reality. And they are not based in the fantastic, except for Iron Fist, in the same way that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is. And I think that is a nice dichotomy, where they have the fantastic world on the big screen and the gritty, small, realistic world on the small screen. One informs the other, but doesn't dominate. So I think that there will be references to it, but I can't imagine that, for example, in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that the Infinity War film will have the same effect as Winter Soldier did, for example.
Oh, yeah. The only tough part about it is, if you figure that half the universe has just disappeared, you'd also expect, you know, the probability of half of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cast to also be disappearing. But they could also pull like an Ant-Man and the Wasp, where it's happening kind of in the interim between the events of Civil War and this next Avengers movie, because there was a little bit of a time gap in between those. I think it was like either 6 months or a year or something they were talking about. But there's plenty of space for those shows to fit. And I don't know how many of them are coming out, especially with the Defenders in this year. But it'll probably be 3 or 4 of them.
What's left on the schedule? Jessica Jones just came out.
Yeah. I think Daredevil will come out again, because that usually comes out in the fall.
Right. And we might see Luke Cage.
Yeah.
As well. So yeah, there's opportunities for them to pick up on the threads, but I can't imagine they'll do much more than use it as a backdrop to talk about why they need to band together again. Yeah. So what do you think was missing from the movie? Did it hit all the right notes for you, or was there something you would have liked to have seen?
As I mentioned earlier, that I thought I would have liked to see a little more of Captain America, just because even though it was Iron Man that launched the MCU, you know, Captain America was the first Avenger. So I thought he'd have a greater prominent role. I also really, really had been hoping that we would see every single character in a shot together. I thought that would have been the coolest thing, especially because you have the great team up shots from the first two Avengers movies, and you're kind of just like, everyone was so fractured, and like, how did they film? Like, it looks like they filmed it in completely different spaces that some characters never even interacted with each other. So I think those are the two biggest things off the top of my head I would have liked to have seen.
Okay. For me, I want to know where Hawkeye is.
Yeah.
And Ant-Man and the Wasp not appearing in the film makes perfect sense to me, because they're coming up in their own movie. They don't want the two things to intersect. They don't want to have any sort of weird awkwardness explaining why all of a sudden they were fighting the Infinity War, and now all of a sudden they're going to be going into the Phantom Zone or the Negative Zone, whatever it's called. I can't remember at this time. But the question becomes, is Hawkeye going to show up? Is that why they kept him out of Infinity War? I know there was a lot of speculation on the internet before Infinity War came out that Hawkeye was going to disappear and he was going to become Ronin and go do whatever Ronin does. But I wonder if that's actually going to make an appearance in Ant-Man and the Wasp, if somehow Hawkeye is going to participate in their hijinks, because what other reason? Really, it was just the two, Ant-Man, the Wasp, and Hawkeye, who weren't in the movie. There has to be a reason. There's also
Valkyrie, Lady Sif missing, Corrigan Meek. I'm just like thinking of, you could also say Nakia, but she was probably at the embassy, like she said she was gonna be. So there were some characters that were definitely, you felt their missing presence. I was really surprised that out of all those, Valkyrie wasn't there, because she had been on the ship with Thor and Loki. But Thor did say that it was only like half of the Asgardians that were left that were killed. So I'm guessing maybe Valkyrie and Korg jumped ship with a bunch of Asgardians to keep them safe right before Thanos boarded. But
absolutely. The success of Thor Ragnarok has also guaranteed a Thor 4. So they need somebody to participate with Thor in the resurrection of Asgard, I suppose. So, now that you've seen Infinity War, and you know what's planned for the future, will a non-team-up movie ever satisfy you ever again?
Oh, of course. This is because my favorite Marvel movie is still Winter Soldier. And I like that it was a very, I like those tighter knit stories. I'll probably say my favorite Marvel properties are, you know, the Jessica Jones show. I just feel like you get to spend more time with the characters and you get to see more of the struggles of their own journey. And that has more of a impact with me. You know, the big Avengers movies, they're great for, you know, they always feel fast to me. Like everything has to happen at a quicker pace. Meanwhile, with a TV show or the one-off movies, you get a little slower burn. And I like that just a bit more. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense okay. to me.
So while
I think that for me, there's always going to be a time and a place for those solo movies,
mm-hmm.
but I'm always going to yearn for Rocket to be talking smack to Thor or Peter Quill to be making fun of Tony Stark's plans.
Mm.
So that's always going to be in the back of my mind. And that's one thing that they've done well, is that even if the properties were separate and they weren't doing a particular movie, they can interact. So the one mm-hmm. that really resonates with me right now is Chris Evans. And I think it was in the second Thor when he did the cameo when Loki pretended to be Captain America. And that's all it took to remind you that this is a bigger world. So as long as they're introducing elements like that, I think I'll be satisfied, despite my preference for the larger team-up films.
Yeah, I like that. I like that premise too, where you can bring in, the interconnectivity is just, it's great. It's something you, like, 10 years ago, we would not have ever imagined, and being done so. The Marvel films, even the weaker ones, they've been done with so much love to the source material that it feels like a dream. Like, how did we ever get here?
I was talking to a friend, and I asked if he was bringing his son to see Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically said that his kid is spoiled because he's never lived in a world without superheroes.
Oh, my God.
And I think back to my youth when we watched the bootlegged copy of the Fantastic Four with the rubber thing and the terrible plastic hands going at the Roger Corman of the Fantastic Four. And kids today don't have to worry about that. They get Hulk and Iron Man and Thor and Thanos. It's a different world. It's a better world we live in now than the one we grew up in.
And not only that, they get it done so well. Like, they're in the next, Marvel's got to worry about the kids, because they're going to have a huge, when they grow up, they're going to have a super high level of knowing what's good and what's bad, because they're growing Absolutely. Up in such a good age.
So there's been lots of rumors about what they're going to be doing with Captain Marvel, and it's relevant to the Avengers Infinity War conversation because of what Nick Fury did and sent the message to Carol.
Yeah.
So what do you think, why do you think she wasn't involved? I have my own theory, but I'm curious to hear why you think Nick Fury was keeping her away from the Avengers.
It's probably because, well, this actually could be very interesting, because I hadn't thought about this before, but on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now, they're dealing with these aliens who are kind of like mercenaries or whatever, and we know Coulson is in the Captain Marvel movie, and mm-hmm. it makes me think, and we also know that there's been, this is, you know, going back to Winter Soldier, there's been an intertwining of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra for decades. So we know that Hydra's always been interested in, the alien extraterrestrial world. You see it with, what's his name? Strucker and even the Red Skull. And in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they established that before Hydra was Hydra, they were kind of like this cult that sent people to alien planets. So I think S.H.I.E.L.D. has known about Life Beyond for a really long time. And that's just been one of those things that Fury has, you know, kept to himself or a very small trusted group of agents, which didn't include Coulson. And, or maybe it did. Maybe Coulson is just playing it really straight at this point. But I think it's, you know, that's a thread I have to pull more on, but the gears have been turned.
So that's a pretty interesting theory. My theory is, so I don't know too much about Captain Marvel, but I understand that Captain Marvel is one of those powerful mm-hmm. characters in the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. What if, so I understand that Captain Marvel movie might actually be a prequel. Yeah. So it takes place before Avengers Infinity War, before some of the other stuff. So Coulson might actually be, apparently, I don't know, that's what I've heard.
It takes place in the 90s, they said. So it's, yeah, it's so that, very early.
So my thinking is, what if Captain Marvel is, as they're developing the Avengers initiative and mm-hmm. they're trying to figure out, what if Captain Marvel is developed as a counter to the Avengers in case the Avengers ever turn on the Earth? Oh. Which is why Fury knew about Captain Marvel, but the Avengers didn't know about Captain Marvel. And now, in this time when the Avengers need some serious help, mm-hmm. he's calling in the muscle. He needs to bring these two forces together to try and save what's left of
him. Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense, too, because you think of, like, you know, Black Widow's training. Black Widow, you know, she said, you know, compartmentalization. Like, not everyone can know all the facts because it's too much power for one person. So, you know, that makes it... That actually goes in line with a lot of things. And I think that could be one of the potentials. That, or there's a secondary superhero team that is floating in space, and maybe Valkyrie went to go join it, which is one of my theories, yeah. But...
That would be amazing.
Oh my god, that would be an epic team up. So, do you have any other, like, lasting impressions of the movie, or... It's so hard to think about.
My lasting impression of the movie is this. Obviously, we're all fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, people thought The Infinity War was an amazing movie. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that really impressed me is that there were actually 16 actors who starred in Infinity War who've had their name at the top of a movie poster. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't include Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, or Tom Holland. Tom Holland's only had his name at the top of a movie poster in Spider-Man, so I'm not giving him that for the purposes of this. But he has. So 19 total if you include those three.
Wow.
And the fact that the movie held together so well, that there weren't any narrative gaps, mm-hmm. that each of these massive, massive stars had the opportunity to shine... It's a testament to the excellent writing of the movie, mm-hmm. and it really speaks to what the cinematic universe has been able to do in terms of quality. It's just, people were making fun of the fact that they were saying this is the most ambitious crossover event in history, but the fact is, I don't think there's ever been that many movie stars in a movie before, ever. And we need to give credit to the creators for making that work, because mm-hmm. it could have easily been really, really bad. It could have been as bad as it was good.
Oh, yeah. And I think I read that this was the most expensive movie ever made, I think.
Could be,
but
right.
But it seems so, because you think of all the... They have huge names, so they get top dollar for their films.
Absolutely. I mean,
that's why they had to kill everyone.
Between Robert Downey Jr. and Scarlett Johansson, it's $75 million right there. Mm-hmm. So,
and they're for both movies, or at least, I mean, I don't know how long they'll last into the next movie. I think Black Widow is okay, but I don't think so much for Tony.
Yeah, I think Tony is not long for this world. I feel like Pepper is going to have to say goodbye.
Unless Pepper's already gone too.
Now you're just making me cry.
All right, well, I will let you end on that sad note, because that's how the movie overall made me feel, but in a good, sad in a good way. Like, I was entertained, but I'm sad.
I think you speak for half of the people who saw the film.
The surviving half.
Exactly.
All right, so hopefully we will not explode in this year. At least it's a year wait. Like, it sounds bad right now, but it goes by pretty quick.
Does it?
No.
Thanks, Laura.
All right, have a good night.
You too.
Bye. Bye.